BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Speed option here. Dylan Gabriel down the sideline. He's winning the foot race. Gabriel, touchdown! With a vapor trail from 54 yards.
Rodgers, option. Pitch. Didn't get it. They stopped him. Cal Thornton, the captain linebacker, with a game-saving play and a loss of one.
We're going to start today by talking about the Apple Cup and the Civil War. What do you make of what went down over the weekend? In Corvallis, it was Oregon big. Blowout victory for the Ducks, dominating second half. What was that about for you? Was that more about Oregon or Oregon State? And if it's Oregon State, is it an NIL deficiency? Or does it have something else to do with Jonathan Smith's defection, maybe? Roster retention, you tell me. 503-417-7575. I have my theories. I want to hear yours. Civil War football game ended with a rout as Oregon ran away in the second half. 27-0 in the second half. Ducks put it away. They improved to 3-0 heading into their bye week or their off week. Oregon State, 2-1, ready to host Purdue this weekend. Was it more about Oregon or Oregon State? Or some combination of the two? And if it is about Oregon, is it about Oregon fixing things? Is it about Oregon strictly being better athletically? 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I want you to tell me what the Civil War outcome told you about the Ducks and the Beavers. Meanwhile, in Seattle, an emotional Jake Dickert on the field after Washington State's win over Washington.
Grit, toughness. I love this team. They stayed here for this. Sorry, I'm emotional, but I love these guys. They love each other. We said we were going to win this game, not because we hated them, but because we loved each other. And that's what you saw there for four quarters.
If you're Washington State, do you start thinking about the college football playoff even after 3 weeks? Season, regular season, just a quarter of the way done. Are you thinking about the finish line if you're Washington State? I think you kind of have to. But Washington State will not have a lot of margin as they try to get to the playoff as one of the at-large teams. They have to get one of the 7 at-large berths. They are not eligible for an automatic bid if they win the conference championship because it's only a 2-team conference. That'll change in 2026, and we'll get to that on today's show as we talk about the Pac-12's continued quest to expand. Scott Barnes, the Oregon State Athletic Director, speaking over the weekend at Reser Stadium, saying that he believes this will happen rapidly. He'd like to wrap it up sooner rather than later. I am told that the Pac-12 is targeting 9 conference members, not just 8. There are 2 open seats. They have to get to 8 by July 1st of 2026. I expect they're going to try to get to 9. I'll talk about why that is and who the candidates are on today's program. I know we have a lot of new listeners who will be streaming the show in San Diego, in Boise, and you know, Fort Collins, Colorado. I talked to the ADs at San Diego State and Colorado State over the weekend. I was standing in the press box at Reser Stadium before kickoff and called both of the athletic directors, called those two, and just sort of said, you know, give me the mood in the last 48 to 72 hours as those schools are making the announcement last week that they are joining the Pac-12, made that announcement 6 a.m. on Thursday morning. And I said, you know, what was that like for you? What was that like for your fan base? One of them used the word thrilled. One of them used the word electrified. Both of them were mainly talking about the fact that people are just super excited to be with the haves finally. And they are viewing the Pac-12 conference as a have. I'm going to clear up one of the great mysteries as it pertains to what the expansion of the Pac-12 means. I feel like about half the people at Reser Stadium on Saturday don't know how the playoff is going to work moving forward. And that includes some media members. Like, I'm not going to call anybody out, but I had a conversation with a media member, and I just left slapping my forehead because I'm like, if media doesn't understand how the playoff works, how are fans supposed to understand how the playoff works? And so we're going to drill down on that. We'll also talk a little bit about television on today's show. TV has been an ongoing source of frustration for fans of the Big Ten Conference with the blackout between Comcast and the Big Ten Network, fans who just want to watch football, who have DirecTV, the deal between ESPN, Disney, DirecTV finally got ironed out, but still came with friction. The Peacock broadcasts have had hiccups here and there, and now UCLA and Oregon scheduled to play a football game in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl here. That'll be Oregon's next football game as they come off of this bye, and nobody knows when the kickoff time is. And so the Big Ten seemingly will get a kickoff time out. That Big Ten Network and the Big Ten Conference and its TV partners use 12-day windows. They do have four, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, six-day windows, just like the Pac-12 conference had back in the day with its deal with ESPN. So we'll talk about all of that on today's show, but I want a lot of your phone calls right off the top. Like, I want you to tell me, was the outcome of the Civil War more about Oregon, or did it tell you more about Oregon State? Blowout victory for the Ducks. 503-417-7575 is the number. Now, I think it says both. Like, that's kind of, and I'm not a fence sitter, but I think it points to both of the schools. Oregon has better athletes. It's evident. You could see it on Saturday. The skill positions, it's not comparable. The quarterback position, you would take, two or three of Oregon's quarterbacks before you would take Javonte McCoy at Oregon State. Nothing personal to him, but it's just evident that, Oregon's got the guys and has the skill positions. And in the first half on Saturday, I thought, gosh, Oregon State's playing almost perfect. Have made a couple of mistakes. It's cost them a score on a drive, and that's really the difference in the game. But in the second half, it was Oregon's execution. It was Dillon Gabriel. It was, Tez Johnson and Trayshawn Holden. It was Oregon's running backs. It's just evident that Oregon's skill position players are just light years ahead of where Oregon State is. But is that NIL driven in your mind, or is there something else at play? Because I heard a lot of debate in the wake of the game and a lot of frustration from Oregon State fans saying, hey, we don't have the NIL collective. We're never going to be able to spend on the level that Oregon's going to spend. But I would caution people and just say, hey, it's NIL matters. Sure. It's huge. It's huge when it comes to recruiting. But I think the bigger immediate impact at Oregon State and the bigger impact on that Civil War football game had to do with the departure of Jonathan Smith more than anything. And I'm holding up the Apple Cup as an example of that. You got a new head coach at Washington, a changing of the guard. You have a lot of continuity at Washington State. And what happened? Washington State was able to walk off with a victory in the Apple Cup. But Jonathan Smith leaving Oregon State and taking Aiden Childs with him and Damian Martinez saying, I'm out of here. And guys like Silas Bolden going, I'm going to go to Texas. In the end, I think that hurt Oregon State on Saturday more than anything. NIL over the long haul, a problem for Oregon State relative to Oregon in that conversation. We could talk about it. But I just feel like, look, the reason you got blown off the field in the second half was Oregon has playmakers. Oregon has big bodies. And Oregon State eventually just went, okay, we cannot compete with this. I want your take. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I think an uptick in enthusiasm in general with Washington State and Oregon State now seeing how they fit in the college football playoff picture, seeing how they're going to fill those final conference spots, but certainly a demoralizing day for Beaver fans and maybe an uplifting day for Oregon fans. I don't know. You tell me, Oregon fan, do you feel like something got fixed? Because I kind of looked at what Oregon was doing and I went, something got fixed here. The offensive line looks better. And when the offensive line's better, guess what? Dillon Gabriel, the running backs, Trayshawn Holden, Tez Johnson, those guys are going to matter. They're difficult. They're a difficult matchup for Oregon State right now. 503-417-7575. Let's go to the phone lines. Roy in Portland. Roy, I got to know, 13-12, Georgia over Kentucky. Whew, were you sweating that?
No, I wasn't sweating. You know, I got a couple of friends that's Kentucky fans. They was calling up. I said, just keep watching. We are not going to lose. Okay? And they were just so disappointed. I told them after the game, I said, listen, we're not losing to Kentucky. So, I mean, you know, we barely got out of there. But, you know, of course people don't want to see us in the playoff because we got the toughest schedule in the country. We got to go to Ole Miss. We got to play Tennessee. We got to play the number one team now is Texas. We got to go to Texas. We got to go to Alabama. I mean, if we go undefeated, man, this year, then Kirby Smart deserves a raise because I think we're going to get beat by somebody, either Texas or Alabama. I don't think we're going undefeated.
Well, were you bummed that Texas slips in front of Georgia in the AP poll, or do you wave that off and go, hey, it'll take care of itself?
No, Texas looks pretty good, but we'll see on the field. Okay. We'll see on the field. But, John, man, I want to talk about this. John, I don't understand what's going on with this whole Oregon State, Washington State thing, man. Because to me, and I don't want to rain on Oregon State, Washington State parade. It just doesn't make any sense to me. You're getting a bunch of Mountain West schools to come over under the banner of the fake Pac-12. You're not the Pac-12. And I don't know if they're selling that we have the Pac-12 name and we're going to be one of the Power Five. No, you're not. Because the ACC and the Big Ten and the rest of it is not going to let the winner of this new Pac-12 become a Power Five school. They are going to complain. You think the Big Ten and the SEC is going to let the winner of this new Pac-12 in over possibly their number two or number three team, say Texas wins the SEC.
And okay. Then all right, Georgia you're hitting on a great point, Roy. Okay, so this year in the playoff, who are the automatic qualifiers in your mind without looking it up? Who are the, like, don't name the schools, but which conferences will get an automatic qualifier to the playoff?
The SEC, the Big 12, the Big 10, and the ACC.
You're missing one.
What was that?
There's five automatic qualifiers.
who else?
You're hitting on it. It's the five highest-ranked conference champions get automatic berths. So
right,
either...
But I understand that, they're not going to allow the Pac-12. I'm telling you, those schools are going to scream if a glorified Mountain West, if say Washington State wins this new conference, do you think Ole Miss or Tennessee with one loss is going to let them in?
They have to let them in. It's already been negotiated. They're getting in. But either the American champion or the Mountain West champion is getting in this year. They're getting an automatic berth. One of those two conferences is getting an automatic berth. There are five auto bids. And I don't blame Roy because I'm glad he brought it up. Because even media members in the press box at Research Stadium were going, no, there's only four. I'm like, go to the college football playoff guidelines and read the guidelines. There are five automatic qualifiers. Now, contrary to popular belief, the Power Four conferences don't have automatic bids. It just says the top five highest-ranked conference champions. Because there could be a year where maybe the Big 12 champion or the ACC champion doesn't fall within, you know, maybe the American and the Mountain West this season both end up rated in front of that conference. I'm not saying it's logical to happen or it's probable to happen, but it could happen. So the five highest-ranked conference champions will get in. What the Pac-12 did by taking the top schools from the Mountain West and trying to form this new world Pac-12, and I agree with Roy, it's not the same as the old Pac-12. It's weakened. But what they did is they destabilized the Mountain West. So that fifth spot after the Power Four is going to go to whoever between the American and the Pac-12 has got the better conference, who has the better, higher-ranked conference champion. That team's getting in the playoff. That's not negotiable. That's not in doubt. Now, I still believe what you're going to have one-loss teams in the SEC, one-loss teams in the Big Ten who are going to, you know, say we should be ranked in front of Boise State or Washington State or whoever, that's fine. But whoever wins the Pac-12 is going to the playoff in most years. Now, the other thing the Pac-12 could do in expanding itself in this round of expansion is if it takes a couple of the key schools from the American, what happens? You even increase your odds of getting that automatic berth. I agree with Roy. It's not the same. This is not like USC and Oregon, and you know, this is not the old Pac-10 or Pac-12. Those, that ship has sailed. But what they have done here by taking the four best schools from the Mountain West and now shopping for more is they have positioned themselves as that number five conference. Probably if they can get Memphis or Tulane or both, head and shoulders above the American. Question. And so you're going to get it. You're going to get that automatic berth in most years.
Good question for you here, John, because last week I believe you said you thought the Pac-12 would end up with 8 to 10 teams, and that makes a lot of sense. But
they're going to end up at 9. I'm told now it'll be 9.
But to me, wouldn't it make more sense to, like you said, go raid the American, get a Memphis, get a Tulane, get all the best teams from there, and then
take them all.
And then even go out and try to get a Texas State or anybody like that and just try to get all the best teams in the one conference. And even if it is 12 teams, you have all the best teams, so it is basically a guarantee, almost a guarantee, that whoever wins your conference is going to the college football playoff. Like, to me, it makes sense to bring all the best teams in and not leave anybody for anybody else.
All right, here's the counterpoint to that. One, they want to play 8 conference games because they want to leave the ability to schedule some payday games against other conferences that could be lucrative to them. The second thing is, they want to leave some seats open in case there's chaos in the ACC. So I get it. Like, yes, go get all the best. But if you can take 3 right now from the American, or even 2 from the American, and go back and shop, do you take Air Force? Is it Memphis? Is it UTSA? Is it Tulane? Is it Air Force? I think right now there's a beauty contest. Is it UNLV? There's a beauty contest going on, and they're weighing who has the most media value. And guess who they're going to ask? They're not going to ask me and you. They're going to ask the media companies. They're going to go, who do you want? Who brings more value to you? And so I think, you know, the reports today, you saw Pete Thamel, ESPN, Ross Dellinger, Yahoo, both saying that Air Force has had contact with the American. 100% Air Force trying to create leverage, because Air Force is going, don't leave us behind. We want to talk to the American, and we're going to warn the Pac-12, hey, if you don't take us, the American's going to take us. Because I believe Air Force wants into the Pac-12. Air Force is going, hey, we don't want to be left behind. Now, I did have one media consultant tell me that he thought that the play for the Pac-12 might, the best play, best strategy play might be to go grab Army, Navy, and Air Force and take the service academies. Because he said, hey, those are good TV games. Networks will pay for those games. But I'm left kind of going, I just hope everyone understands the strategy here is not dumb. It's not like putting together the old Pac-12, but this is what Oregon State and Washington State have to do right now, given the deadline that they have, given that the ACC is not inviting them in, given that the Big 12 is not inviting them in. What they have to think about are two things: the media deal they can negotiate and the access to the playoff. Now, this whole Power 4 or Power 5 distinction, I know why fans bring it up, because it sounds good, but that Autonomous 4 and Autonomous 5 was a legislative thing that was brought up to say, hey, these Power 4 conferences, Power 5 originally, they need to be able to make decisions. They need to be able to vote on revenue sharing, and they need to be able to vote, like, should we be able to pay athletes, and what should we be able to offer athletes outside of having to call the Big Sky and all these other small conferences and ask permission for it. It doesn't mean you're getting more money. It doesn't mean you have access to the playoff. It is a legislative distinction, so when they get together, they can make decisions where they don't have to include other conferences. So let's be clear about that, because I bring it up too. I bring it up Power 4, Power 5, and the Pac-12 waves me off and goes, yeah, that doesn't apply to the playoff. That doesn't apply to anything else. And when you drill down on it, it does become evident that, you know, like, if Oregon State and Washington State are going to get to the playoff, they're going to do it by putting together this Pac-12 that is the fifth best conference that is out there, and they'll win that conference and you go to the playoff. Now, you know, you don't have to climb over Ohio State and Michigan to get to the playoff. You may get your teeth kicked in once you get there. Let's be real about it, because, you know, there's some well-funded schools that are going to play there. But it's not a bad strategy play for right now for those schools.
How comfortable do you think they are moving out to the east, like to get a Memphis?
I worried about it, and initially, my initial gut was like, no, they're going to stay, you know, Western. They're going to keep the geography. They've been crowing all along. Look at what UCLA, USC, look at these schools going off to the Big Ten. But I was told on Saturday by numerous involved parties, geography doesn't matter.
Like even a South Florida? Is that in consideration even?
I think it would be on the table. I think anything that gets them the most attractive media, you know, markets that they can possibly get are the candidates. And it is a beauty contest right now. And it's why Air Force, I 100% think Air Force is leaking it out to say, hey, we've talked to the American. I saw that this morning and I went, that's so smart. That's smart of them, because if I'm the Pac-12, I'm like, maybe I should take another look at Air Force, because the Pac-12 right now is in competition with the American Athletic Conference for that fifth spot in most years. And, you know, Boise State, Washington State this year, you know, people are going to be talking about those two schools, but Boise State can get to the playoff simply by winning the Mountain West and being higher ranked than the American champion. That's it. They're in. That's the fifth, you know, highest rated champion. So let's go to the phone lines. I want to talk what you want to talk about. Dre's in Portland. Dre, what's up, man?
Jay, just talking about the game.
Yes.
I felt like this was the end of a beautiful rivalry, man. It didn't feel right. Something about it. And a game in September, it's a beautiful day. It felt like when the game got going, it almost felt like Oregon was playing Portland State. And this is no disrespect. Mm-hmm. This is no disrespect to Oregon State at all. But I just think that rivalry now, that game will just become just another game on the schedule. Oregon State's not going to be able to compete with Oregon. Now, if that game was, you know, towards Thanksgiving and there's a little bit more at stake, Jonathan Smith is still there, I think that's a different game.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Appreciate your time, Jay. Thank you.
I felt the same way in the stadium. And a lot of Duck fans get mad at me. And I wrote a column after the game saying something was missing. Same teams, same mascots, same colors. Something was different. And it hit me before kickoff. I was walking around the parking lot. I was walking around the stadium, the field. The students are not in school yet at Oregon State. It was warm down on the field. You know, it was, you know, 68 at kickoff, but it felt warmer down on the field. It wasn't like every other Civil War, and I've covered 22 of them, okay? It wasn't like every other Civil War game that I've ever covered. It was unlike anything. There were no stakes. There was no Rose Bowl at stake. It wasn't like Oregon has to win this to go to the playoff. It was too early. There was something missing. And I don't even know if Oregon State had like full strength, Jonathan Smith, Aiden Childs, all the great players that they lost in the portal. I don't even think that would have replaced it. It just felt like this wasn't as big as the other rivalry games that I've been around. And the Oregon fans got mad, said, you wouldn't have felt that way if Oregon State won. Well, maybe I would have felt differently because it would have been a massive upset by double digits by the Beavers. But Oregon was just too good when the game started. And it was evident even in the first and second quarter as Oregon State was hanging around. I was just like, oh, this is not going to go well. More reps, more, you know, Oregon State had done everything, pretty much everything it possibly could do and still trailed. And, you know, they had a false start and missed a field goal. Otherwise, they were pretty perfect. And Oregon was winning the game. And so in the second half, I go, this is a matter of time. Mark in Portland has called in. Mark, what's on your mind?
Hey, first of all, you know, Oregon definitely passed the test. You know, they did what they needed to do. They do have more talent, and they've been a huge favorite in the first three games, and two out of three of those, they didn't look like the team that we expected. So they did what they're supposed to, but I wanted to ask you guys a question. Six of the seven teams right now are SEC teams at the top of the polls.
Yeah.
So that is an absolute joke to me. Oregon actually dropped behind Miami, who beat Ball State. So how does that happen when they win by 35 points? And, you know, you talked about the offensive line. They had no penalties, no sacks, and they ran the ball very
effectively. Looked great. So they looked great.
That's the start. I can't believe that's the same offensive line that I watched in the first two games. But my question to you is there a limit on how many teams can get
in the playoff, because if the SEC and ESPN and all these power brokers have their way, they're going to try to put five or six SEC teams in the playoff.
Yeah, they're going to try to do everything they can. And here's the deal. I'll get into that. I'll get in. Yep, I will get into what I think is going on with the poll. I think there's bias. I still think, even though the conference realignment has changed things, I still think there's a bias against the teams in the Pacific time zone and out west in general. But I'll get into that. And how the playoffs going to work? You got phone number 503-417-7575. I want you to leave it here. I'll take your phone calls. We've got a great show ahead.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Phone number is 503-417-7575. What should the Pac-12 do? What will it mean? There is a tremendous financial disparity between what the Pac-12 members will receive in college football playoff distributions, $3.6 million each to Oregon State and Washington State over the next 4 years. By comparison, the Big Ten Conference and the SEC Conference teams will get north of $20 million each. The ACC and the Big 12, they accepted and negotiated $12 to $13 million each. You can see the pecking order. What I think the Pac-12 strategy is in this rebuild is to add teams that bring football value and bring media value, try to negotiate a decent media rights negotiation or contract. The alternative is just giving up and going away. Nobody would do that. It's not reasonable. If you're having hard time understanding what the Pac-12 is doing, they're doing what they think is the best possible strategic move. I feel like the audience is kind of split on whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing. This is what's available to them. If they could go to the Big 12 or the ACC, they'd be there in a heartbeat. It's not available to them. And so they're fighting for survival as they have in the last 18 to 24 months. They're adding four Mountain West Conference schools and looking for two to three more, either in the American or the Mountain West. I don't think Stanford and Cal, the more I talk to people, the less realistic it feels that they could get them back now. But I am being told they don't want to grow to like 10 or 12 or 13 or 14 schools. A, they don't want to split the pie that big. It's less money for everybody. Harder to get to the playoff. You have to get over more teams. And then B, you don't leave any room. Should UCLA, Stanford, Cal, somebody, someday, Arizona, Utah, what if somebody wants to come back? You'd rather have those schools back than try to get too big. And then, it's harder to kick members out than it is to take them. So what I think they're going to do is I think they're going to add two to three more. I think the real candidates are schools like Memphis, Tulane, University of Texas, San Antonio, then maybe Air Force, then maybe UNLV. I think they're going to take two or three of those schools. And then I think they're going to say, we think our conference is good enough to have that fifth spot in most years, and our conference champion is going to get to the playoff. And I think they're going to look over at schools like Washington and USC and UCLA and maybe the Arizona schools, and they're going to go, are you sure you have it better off where you are, while trying to negotiate more money from the CFP? Can they get a larger distribution? Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner, thinks they can. Can they get up near what the Big 12 or ACC are getting? That is the question. I don't think they're thinking about catching the Big 10 or the SEC. I think they're just trying to stay within eyesight of the other two. Cam is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports. Eugene, I also want to know what you made of the Civil War and the Apple Cup. Washington State beat Washington. Can we get a round of applause for Jake Dickert and Washington State? I saw that one coming. I think other people did too. And it had more to do with the continuity at Washington State against Washington being, Jed Fish 3 games into his tenure. If I'm Washington State, you have to. It looked to me, because I went back and watched the replay of the game on Sunday, it looked to me like Washington State benefited from this game being in week three. Washington was a little discombobulated. It's a bunch of penalties. At the end of the game, they're running an option to the tight end side of the field, short side of the field. That's the best play you got on the 1.5 yard line? It was just weird, and Washington State blew it up, sniffed it out. Let's go to Cam, who's called in. Cam, what's on your mind?
Hey, John, go Cougs, and it couldn't have happened to a nicer bunch of Huskies, let me tell you. I watched the Civil War game, and I was in person for the War of the Roses in 09, and I really loved that game. It's probably my favorite Oregon game I've ever been to, period, let alone Civil War game. And so it was kind of hard to watch the new normal, and I came away a little concerned for Oregon State. Even though I'm a Duck, I still want them to do well. Anything that's good for state athletics is good for the University of Oregon. And I saw a lot of Beaver fans online. They kind of felt like the have-nots after that game, yeah. And perhaps with good reason. But there is an alarm going off in my head because we had private equity try and get in, venture capital try and get into college football last spring. And I'm worried that somebody in Corvallis is looking at that as if that may be an option, just hypothetically, because I really don't think it is. In fact, I think it would be terrible for the game of football overall. Whether it's a booster or it's NIL, the money is going for yards, touchdowns, championships. That's what the money is going for. That's the return on investment. With private equity, it's profit that's the return on investment. And we've done fairly well in the age of big TV college football because although the point is no longer football, it's about creating a television program. That television program shows a football game. So we're not very far away from, you know, the original things that, you know, that influenced football. But once it goes to private equity, now you're not making football for football's sake, and you're not making a television program for football's sake or having a football game for a television program's sake. Now you're running a football program so that you can pay dividends to an investor.
Yeah.
And that does not work fundamentally. It doesn't make any sense. And every other industry, the majority of them anyway that I've seen, it just, at the end of the day, you have to be doing what you're doing for the right reasons.
And I agree with that. I also think the minute private equity comes into the room, they're looking for an exit. And look, if you're in dire straits and you need an infusion of cash and it can be a quick turn for you and it sets you up for something or bridges you to something, fine. But I agree that you shouldn't be looking for private equity to be part of your business model, in part because they're in the business of gutting and taking profits. And, we have all seen what private equity did to the media business. We've seen what they're doing to healthcare. Look, to each their own. But if I'm college athletics, I'm looking for more of a partner. And as I talked with the Pac-12 conference in recent weeks, I did get the picture that they are looking for partnership. They are not looking for a quick infusion of cash. And so, the ideal companies to partner with are TV companies, media companies. Give them a dog in the fight and they will come through for you. They have proven that with the Big Ten and the SEC. As they have investment in the SEC network with ESPN and with the Big Ten network in Fox. Fox owns 61% of the network. Fox is not going to let the Big Ten fail. That's 61% of their investment. So it's interesting to see kind of that model. Here's a couple things that I want to fill people in on, too, that are interesting. And, Stephen, you pepper me with questions because I think sometimes you think for the audience and you ask questions that people are thinking about. But I was told, too, that the Pac-12's brand, regardless of who's under the umbrella, the brand itself has value, not just to Oregon State and Washington State, and this is going to be confusing for some people, but to media companies as well. That being in partnership with the Pac-12 for the media companies held a higher standard than being in partnership with the Mountain West or the American. That it wasn't close, and that the four schools that are leaving the Mountain West Conference said, we're tired of being with Wyoming, we're tired of being with Utah State and San Jose State, we need to be with Oregon State and Washington State. There's more money and there's more value there. That was one thing. Secondary thing, I immediately started thinking about this from a basketball standpoint. You and I kicked this around last week, Stephen. When you add San Diego State and Boise State to the fold, and Colorado State to the fold, you start to think, like, this is a better conference. I ran into Wayne Tinkle at the Civil War football game. And I said, what did you think? And he said, this is great for us. It's a better basketball conference right now. And I said, I 100% agree. Now, would Gonzaga and St. Mary's entertain leaving the WCC? Cross my mind. Could you get Gonzaga and St. Mary's to play basketball only? I'm being cautioned to think in football terms by all the Pac-12 executives and administrators that I talk with. They're like, this is about football. This is about football. But, Stephen, they just did something that works for basketball really well in taking those three of those four schools are players, like our NCAA tournament teams. And so I am left thinking about the basketball possibilities. You know, could you get Gonzaga? The Big 12 doesn't seem to want them. The Big East isn't going to take them right now. Are they tired of the WCC? People in the WCC are telling me no, no, no. St. Mary's and Gonzaga are happy, you know, for now where they are. They're not going to jump laterally to the Pac-12. I actually think they might be more inclined to use the Pac-12 in the same way Air Force is trying to use the American right now to get to the Pac-12. But I think, you know, I can't help but think about Gonzaga. If they really are restless, is there a better deal for them to join San Diego State and Boise State and Colorado State and Washington State and Oregon State and go, hey, this is not a bad basketball conference?
I think if you're the Pac-12, it is the most logical move to go after Gonzaga and St. Mary's, because those two have brands, especially Gonzaga. I mean, they're a top five, top 10, you know, college basketball brand in the nation, and they bring a lot to the, you know, to the table if you can get them. I think if I'm Gonzaga and St. Mary's, especially Gonzaga, I'm trying to get to the Big 12 or the Big East rather than the Pac-12, but it would be a good fallback option. But you're right with the Pac-12 now with the basketball programs, because Colorado State was getting at-large bids in the Mountain West. Same with Boise State, same with San Diego State, you know, St. Mary's as well. If you can get them, Gonzaga, on all, they bring a big crowd as well. Like, that's the thing, is it's good environments. And so this could be a decent basketball conference as well. You go out and you get a Memphis. They have a good basketball history. They have crazed fans, you know, when it comes to their basketball teams. I think this could become, and wouldn't it be to the same level? You got the Big East out on the East Coast, and you get, right, you got Creighton, you got Butler in the Big East. How come this could turn into a Big East of the West Coast on the West,
sure,
if you're a Pac-12 in the basketball world of things? Is it going to be the big moneymaker like football? No, but it will keep you relevant in that world. So I would, as a basketball fan, I would love for the Pac-12 to go out and try to get a Gonzaga, try to get a St. Mary's, and a Memphis. Like, those
Memphis.
Are, that's yeah, the one for me, is Memphis, and UNLV is another one. They've okay, always had a good basketball program as well. They invest in their basketball program. They love basketball in Las Vegas. Those are the two logical teams if you want to make a really good basketball conference. And it doesn't hurt that Memphis and UNLV have been playing pretty well in football as well. Memphis just went on the road, beat Florida State. UNLV ranked for the first time ever in their school history right now after their win against Kansas. Like, it seems really logical to me to go after Gonzaga, St. Mary's for the basketball only, and then you can get Memphis and UNLV for both football and basketball.
I think you and I are thinking the same. I am being told, you know, by, as I run these things by athletic directors, you know, the six schools that are going to make this decision, administrators, media world sources, they're telling me that's fine. Basketball may come together, but first and foremost, this is going to be a football decision. Now, it's possible that the Gonzaga St. Mary's thing could be explored. I don't expect it to be like the imminent, hey, we're adding Memphis and Gonzaga. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. But I think what we're going to get is, I don't think it's going to take long. You know, I had one AD that I'm supposed to have a conversation with of one of the six schools who, you know, kind of put me off, you know, last night and today. I was asking him to have a conversation about one of the nuances of this expansion. And then he said, you know, can I talk to you later in the week? And I'm just throwing this out there that sometimes that happens when something's going on. And they go, I want to talk to you, but I don't want to be asked something in the next 72 hours as these things are coming together. I don't think it's going to take long for the Pac-12. I think, you know, it could, the way Scott Barnes was sounding, he did his media availability in the press box on Saturday. All the reporters were around him. I walked with him down to his suite in Research Stadium and spoke with him one-on-one in the hallway. And that's where I asked the question. Like, I didn't ask any questions in that group setting because I don't want any of these, you know, the other media members or TV or whatever to take my answer and put it on air. I just kind of listened to what he's saying. And then I asked him down the hallway, you know, I asked him about Stanford and Cal. I asked him about the timeline. I drilled down even harder. Like, you know, are we talking like 48 hours? Are we talking 72 hours? Or, you know, I think it's all on the table. You know, are we talking several weeks? I do know this. Like, if you really just think about it logically, I had another Power Four conference commissioner tell me over the weekend that, you know, they have until July 1, 2026. But this conference commissioner told me what that really means is you have to, by the summer of 25, have everybody announcing where they're going. Nobody is going to want to go beyond about June 30th of 2025. So let's move the calendar forward. In order to make a decision official by June 30th of 2025, he thought you'd, by about Christmas time, you'd have to know everybody that was going to be in your conference. And, you know, and in this world, it's going to be announced. And so they really have between now and like Christmas time to figure out who are those final three teams. And I think it's going to be accelerated by the fact that the American is rubbernecking right now, looking over at them going, what are you guys doing? And by the way, do we want anything that's left in the Mountain West Conference? Can we pick off something that makes us a little stronger? So, you know, if I, the thing that surprises me, Stephen, does it surprise you that nobody else except like you and I and our listeners are thinking about UNLV? Like, it doesn't come up with media consultants. It doesn't come up when I talk to conference sources. They focus on Air Force. They focus on Memphis. They focus on Tulane, UTSA. And then they go, well, if, you know, it, as a fallback, UNLV. And I'm like, I kind of would take UNLV and Memphis in a heartbeat if I could only take two. And if I'm taking three, I need to give Memphis a travel partner. So I grab Tulane or UTSA and I take UNLV.
UNLV was always on the top tier for me of teams you want to go out and get.
Is it just because we like Vegas? Is that it? Are we selfish?
Maybe. It might be.
Do yeah, we just want to go to Vegas?
But I think here's the thing, though. I always thought it was great when the Pac-12, the old Pac-12, kind of made their headquarters in Vegas, right? Like, that's what they were known for. They had the Pac-12 football game in Vegas. They had the Pac-12 basketball tournaments in Vegas. And it's a great spot for all these schools and all these fans to meet up. And the tournaments were very successful there. I think if you're, you know, the new Pac-12, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you kind of make your headquarter, you know, Allegiant Stadium if you're going for football? It's a nice stadium, and I think that kind of would represent the West Coast. And that's kind of, you know, we see neutral site games be put there all the time. And right. UNLV now has now invested in their football team as well, hiring Barry Odom as their coach. Like, he's a big-time coach, and they got him after he was fired from Missouri. Like, he's coached in the SEC before. They went out, they got a quarterback from the FCS level. They've spent some money there, and their basketball team always does that as well. I never understood why Vegas wasn't the school that the Pac-12 wanted. It's a growing market where they're getting the NFL. They're going to get, you know, the NBA and Major League Baseball at some point. Like, they're going to go to Las Vegas. Why wouldn't you want to go buy in earlier before the kind of people are realizing how big this is going to get out in Las Vegas?
I wonder if just all these conferences think they can go to Vegas anyway. I'll just visit. I don't need to buy, you know, because they're going to, you know, Big Ten's talking about holding their conference basketball tournaments in Vegas. Big 12 is talking about holding events in Vegas, including their media day. Maybe you get to visit Vegas. You don't have to buy Vegas. I don't know. It's not the biggest media market, but it is an emerging market and a growing market. And I just think somebody at some point is going to go, hey, you know what? UNLV doesn't have a lot of football history, but look at them now. They seem to have figured some things out. We'll see and, what happens with the
Pac-12.
And isn't
it more importantly, there's tons of money out in Vegas.
Yep. And Pat Forty talking about it. Here's Pat Forty.
The damn Fremont Cannon keeps UNLV out of the Pac-12. That's the trinket they play for in their rivalry game with Reno. Vegas is going to turn that cannon on Reno and shoot it at them because Vegas is like that. They should be a natural fit there, both geographically and to have Las Vegas, to have
right.
the market and to have access to the stadium for your championship game and so many other things. It just fit.
Well, look, we'll take a break here. Is it possible Nevada is holding UNLV back? It's possible. We'll tell you more next.
Mike.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Statement win for Oregon. How about a statement win for Washington State as well? Civil War winner, Apple Cup winner. I have a feeling we're going to keep track of the Big Ten versus Pac-12 record in that series as they split away. So it's 1-1. Got a lot of respect for what Jake Dickert is doing in Pullman. Thought Dan Lanning and the Ducks, more than just the athleticism, more than just the execution, I thought Oregon was the tougher team. I think they were just more physical and resilient than Oregon State was in that game. And I think that, you know, I think we all know that if somebody said, hey, you have to play a fifth quarter, I think Oregon State wouldn't have wanted to play the fifth quarter. And Oregon would have. Oregon was having fun in that second half. We'll talk about more of that coming up.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Just looking at Caitlin Clark's stats during the commercial break. She is sitting at 19.5 points per game. The line at the beginning of the year, Stephen, for Caitlin Clark's over-under on points in the WNBA regular season is 21.9. You would think that's going under. But there's one game left in the regular season for the Indiana Fever. And by the way, she scored 35 last night. They play on Thursday at Washington. The Mystics. I kind of think she's trying to get to 20 points a game. She's at 19.5. But the over-under is 21.9. And I'm trying to do the math very quickly on what she needs to get over 20 points a game. I think that's because she went for 35 last night. 35 and 8 assists against Dallas. And they needed every point, 110 to 109 was the victory. But she took 22 shots, 14 threes, and got 35. You think she's trying to get to 20 a game average?
Yeah, I think so. I think 20 is probably pretty doable because according to my math, they play 40 games, so you'd have to get 800 points, right, to be 20?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if she got 39 in her final game, she would get 800 points. That'd be exactly 800 points. That'd be 20 a game.
Look at you doing the math on the fly.
Look at that.
That's good math. Like, you know, kids today, they're solving math problems more creatively. Like, my kid will come home with a math question. I'll be like, here's how I do it. And she's like, no, we have a trick.
We were doing math flashcards with our kids, like multiplication for my oldest. And my wife, you know, Coach Vaughn, she's a math teacher. And she's like, I understand what they're doing with the way he was, like, trying to do the whole process. She's like, I don't like it, though.
She needs 876 points to get to
21.9. Yeah, so she's going to have to go for 100.
She's going to need 100 points in this final game. Wilt Chamberlain says, no problem. Caitlin Clark, good season, good rookie season for her, fair. Like, how are we classifying this? Or do we wait for the playoffs to kind of say what kind of year it was for Caitlin Clark?
You know, I was kind of a doubter of Caitlin Clark coming in, and I would say it was an excellent season for her. You know, it started out as a struggle, which I expected, and she turned it around really quickly, more quick than I thought she would. And now, you know, her assists are up. She's great, you know, passing the basketball, 8.5 assists a game. I want to say, you know, it is definitely a rookie record. I might even say it's one of the, you know, towards the top of the, a league record as well.
Yeah, she set the single season assist record.
Okay, I didn't know if she had officially set that, but yeah, I knew it was a rookie one. So
317.
Yeah. I mean, she's had a great year, and I think she's kind of figured out the physicality, and I think we overblew everything at the very beginning because we wanted to see her come in and be, you know, Michael Jordan, LeBron James right away from day one. That just wasn't going to happen. She's not, you know, that type of athlete, but she's figured out, and she's one of the better players in the WNBA. So, no, I think no matter what happens in the playoffs, it'd be a very successful season. I think WNBA got exactly what they wanted. They have their rivalry with her and Angel Reese. People still love that. And the fact that she's going to be in the playoffs, I think is going to be huge for them as well. Like, there'll be probably people tuning in for that.
And they are in the playoffs as the sixth seed, it looks like. You know, they have no chance to move up, no shot to move down. So they'll be the sixth team in the playoffs. They reseed in... regardless of East West, they are the number six team, and so they'll be 500 or better because they're 20-19 with one to go, and the arenas have attendances up, viewership is up, the playoffs will be a focal point of the playoffs. I think it's a good year for her, and like you, I was kind of over it after she got drafted and all the hype and the hysteria. I didn't mind. You know, a little bit seeing people kind of block her shot and go after her because I thought, okay, she's had her fun. But, she's come through this all right. And so I will be curious to see, though, how many points does she need? 39?
39.
Let's see if she gets, like, I don't know what the over-under is.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. I don't know that it's out yet, but I feel like over's got to be an easy one.
I kind of think they're going to set it like 28. 25. It'll be some more modest number. I kind of think she's going to try to go to average 20 points in the season. And don't tell me stats don't matter. She's a basketball player.
I know I would. I'd be on for it. I actually did that when I was a junior at college. I figured out how many points I needed to average 10 points on the season. And I was trying to it wasn't like I was going out of my way to get points, but I was trying to get up to 10.
You were like, give me the ball on the layup, huh?
Yeah.
Trying to get a cheap one?
Just shoot bad shots.
Would you ever do you lose respect for a player if they need a rebound and they shoot a intentionally errant shot to grab their own rebound?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to go for stats, but you got to stay within the game. That's the old Mark Titus thing. He'd always go for the trillion. He would try to play as many minutes as he could and not get any stats, but he can't go out of your way to, like, not get a rebound or not get an assist or not shoot a shot. Like, you have to at least play the game with some integrity, but, like, missing your own shot to get a rebound, that's just kind of whack.
You know how they say, like, sometimes, you know, I remember this of Nicholas Batum. They'd go, he does a lot of things that don't show up in the box. You know, you look at the score sheet, he does a lot of things that don't show up there. There are other players who only do things that show up there. And so, conversely, I think that's worse. All right, we're going to play a little Punch It. I'm going to catch you up on everything that happened in sports on the weekend. I love this segment. Let's go.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, let's start with Dylan Gabriel, who looked comfortable and in rhythm for the first time this season in Oregon's offense. 54-yard touchdown run. It's an electric moment in the first half.
Speed option here. Dylan Gabriel down the sideline. He's winning the foot race. Gabriel, touchdown! With a vapor trail from 54 yards.
Gabriel, 54 yards for the score. Oregon with a big victory in the Civil War, blowing out Oregon State in the second half in particular. Dan Lanning talked about his offense. They were clean.
I think all of it played a part. I think the biggest thing is you saw in this game where we had three penalties. Right, I think that's the biggest difference. When we don't put ourselves in a negative hole to start, especially coming into an environment where it's a road game, I think that our guys' focus was really cranked up as far as staying in a rhythm, and that really paid off. When we weren't playing for 2nd and 12 and we're playing for 2nd and 4, right, you can play a game the clean way.
49-14 is your final.
Did they figure Oregon's out their offensive line? Did they figure out the offensive line troubles?
We'll get back to that because it against Oregon State, I want to see it against a little better competition. Trent Bray talking about Oregon's execution.
I think it just came down to when plays were supposed to be made, Oregon did a nice job of making them, and we didn't. And I think that's about it. Their energy, their focus, their commitment to it, I didn't question that at all.
Joel Klatt saying, that's better.
Defense was terrific. They were able to run the ball well, 240 yards on the ground, 7.5 per carry. And this is, by the way, an Oregon State team that prided itself on being physical. Remember now. Trent Bray takes over. He was the defensive coordinator. I told you before this game, like, I thought it was going to be close. I thought Oregon State was actually going to get to cover and I took the points with Oregon State, and Oregon handled them. Gabriel, 20 of 24 for 291, two passing touchdowns, a long TD run of 54 yards, and the defense pitched a shutout in the second half. That was dominant. That's what we expected to see out of Oregon in the first week of the season, and we didn't. And I was worried about them. They corrected that. And now moving forward, everybody in the Big Ten, they're going to have to deal with a team that has that potential.
Oregon gets through this first three games of the schedule, 3-0. They get a bye week before they head into Big Ten conference play. The schedule has worked for them beautifully. It looked to me like they'd figure some things out on the offensive line. I still need to see it against better competition. Trouble is, you're going to get them against UCLA. They have been anemic, inept, whatever you want to call it. UCLA not looking good, last week against Indiana on Saturday, getting beat. I think Oregon will handle them, but in a weird way, it kind of works out for Oregon that they get these tune-up games, primers, in the front of you-know-who coming on October 12th. Meanwhile, Colorado State Coach Prime, at the end of this game, had his starters in late, throwing long passes, going for it on fourth down. What was Colorado trying to do to Colorado State? Here's Deion Sanders.
Wonderful game. Personal game, heartfelt game, emotional game. They kind of make it like that. We just want to play some football. The disrespect was uncalled for throughout the week. A couple of their players took shots at the whole program and a few of our players, so it is what it is. So we knew that coming into the game, it was going to be a bit personal, and it was. I think one of our coaches, Coach Phillips, doing warm-ups, one of the guys ran into him and elbowed him, which is uncalled for. I just pray that our kids never act in that manner, because I know you guys would have a field day if they did. But I know you won't say anything or do anything when the opposing team does that versus us. Make derogatory comments during the week about our program.
There's taking the high road and taking the low road. But Coach Prime not going to give Colorado State any kind of berth on this one.
What did you make of Shador Sanders not embracing the Colorado State quarterback after the game?
I don't like it.
Telling
I don't
him to
care.
F off.
I don't like it. I don't care what was said in the run-up to the game. I think after the game, you shake hands and you agree that that's part of the game. But you're not getting that from Colorado, and it's part of why I think there's some people out there that don't like him and root against him. I thought Colorado State would give him a better game. I was a little bit surprised that Colorado had its way the way it did. Travis Hunter is fantastic. Shador looked good throwing the ball. I still don't know if Colorado's going to be bowl eligible, even though they're sitting here at 2-1 at this point. Meanwhile, Washington State, Washington, Apple Cup, dramatic fourth down in the game.
Rodgers, option, pitch, didn't get it. They stuffed him. Cal Thornton, the captain linebacker, with a game-saving play and a loss of one.
Game-saving play, loss of one. It was a weird play call by Jed Fish. I don't know what he was thinking. Emotional Jake Dickert after the game. Washington State coach says he's keeping the trophy. They're going to retire it in Pullman.
Grit, toughness. I love this team. They stayed here for this. Sorry, I'm emotional, but I love these guys. They love each other. We said we were going to win this game, not because we hated them, but because we loved each other. And that's what you saw there for four quarters.
Not because we hated them, but because we love each other. Jake Dickert will join us on Wednesday right here on this show. But what an emotional scene in Seattle at Lumen Field as Washington State fans jumped the rail. It was everything that I think they had thought about and hoped for. They were a slight underdog in this game, 4.5, 5-point underdog. I picked them to win it. I thought they could. And I think it said something, too, about Washington and where they are as a program. Not impressed with their quarterback play. Not impressed in general. Like, it felt like a program that was amid a rebuild. Really sloppy with the penalties. Untimely, drive-killing, drive-extending penalties. Just some bad ones. Jed Fish didn't look happy after the game. He looked kind of sick to him, his stomach as he was walking about the field. Nick Aliotti said it was a statement for Washington State. Are the Cougars thinking about the playoff now?
That is a huge statement win for Washington State. And I see nothing but blue skies ahead for them. Really? I mean, but who on that schedule could beat them if they play like they continue to play? They have a chance to be a 10-win team. Now, it's early, but they have a chance to make a great statement. And today's win against Washington goes a long way.
Saturday or Friday, they'll be home against San Jose State. That should be a W. Then it's a big one. 8 days later, they are at Boise State in a game that will be two future Pac-12 teams playing each other. But that'll be a tough one for Washington State. Beyond that, it's Fresno State. It's Hawaii. It's San Diego State. It's Utah State. It's New Mexico. Then Oregon State. Then Wyoming. Steven, I think there's better than a 10-win season out there for them. I think there's a possible 12-win season. If they can beat Boise State in Boise, it'll be a tough task for Washington State. But that is a potential at-large playoff team if they can hold this together.
Well, that's my question to you, John, is, and people are starting to talk about this a little bit because they're right. You're right. Like, Washington State, their schedule doesn't have like a whole bunch left on it. They've already beaten Texas Tech and Washington. Now you got Boise State, Fresno State, Oregon State. Can Washington State lose one of those games, be 11-1, and get an at-large bid in the college football playoff? I don't think so. I think they're going to have to run the table. I think they're going to hold that against them. But can they lose one of these games and still say, we have a legitimate chance to make the college football playoff at 11-1?
I don't think so. It depends what happens elsewhere. But I think given the fact that, you know, I looked at the AP poll, I said, okay, what kind of respect are they getting after winning, beating Washington? They're not getting any respect. Just a little, getting some extra votes. But they're going to have to win games, including the game at Boise. And they will like Group of Five teams, be impossible to ignore if they are 8-0, 9-0, 10-0, 11-0, 12-0. But if you throw a loss in there, particularly a loss that isn't Boise State, that's the only one I think you could argue for at this point. Like, if they go to Boise State and lose in overtime, maybe at 11-1, I think they can make a case. But you'd feel a lot better at 12-0. Yogi Roth talking about the Huskies. What is wrong with Jed Fish's team as they lose the Apple Cup?
Yeah, I think you're seeing a first-year team for Jed Fish. And when the moment showed up, which was a huge rivalry game, really early in his tenure, let alone early in everybody's college football season, I thought the emotions of that game captured them a little bit too much. I love what Coach Fish referenced after the game about his team of, hey, we just got to keep growing through this thing. I didn't have any problem with the call there at the end, but when you're going to option it, you got to option it off of somebody. There was nobody that was free, and the play just got strung out. Wazoo made a nice play to win the ball game.
I have 100% problem with the play call at the end. You know, no disrespect to Yogi, but I didn't see option all day long from the quarterback. I don't know if he can run option. I didn't see it in any of the prior games. I think Washington, in that moment, if you're going to lose, you lose throwing your best pitch. You don't lose trying to trick the opposition. You don't lose trying to run something that, well, we're going to outsmart them. I line up and I, you know, Nolan Ryan throws a fastball with the game on the line. You know, he's not throwing a knuckleball. He's not throwing a changeup. No, here's my best pitch. Hit it. And I thought Washington in that moment did not throw its best pitch.
Washington's got a tough schedule, John. You know, coming up, Northwestern, not great, but at Rutgers, who's been better, Michigan, who's still okay, at Iowa, at Indiana, who had the big win against UCLA, USC, Penn State, UCLA, and then Oregon. Is this a bowl team, or is this a team that is risking to be 5-7 on this season?
I think they're going to go 1-4 in their last five. So, you know, I think a lot of it depends on what happens. I think UCLA is the only win they have down the stretch. Beyond that, I think they got some problems. Arch Manning got in the football game, and it looked good.
But they hadn't done much on the ground in this game.
Oh, look at Arch Manning. Oh, hit him with the two-step. Arch Manning, touchdown.
67-yard touchdown run as he takes over for Quinn Ewers. Texas, now the number one team in the AP poll, 56-7 over University of Texas, San Antonio. Keep in mind, that could be a future Pac-12 member.
How about Arch Manning with the speed? You don't see that out of Manning's.
No.
Eli and Peyton couldn't run away from people.
We'll see. But Texas, now the number one team in the polls. And Georgia? Look, I know it was funny. Like, Kirby Smart, after Georgia wins 13-12 against Kentucky, one of the first things he says after the game is, hey, you don't judge SEC teams on one game. And I mostly think that's true. But shouldn't we not judge any team based on one game? Like, you know, 13-12 against Kentucky, a win is a win is a win. But why is Oregon getting held to a different standard than Georgia? Is it the fact that Georgia has, you know, 47 wins in its last 49 games? Probably. It, you know, I think there's a little bit of a benefit of a doubt that comes when you've had the success that Kirby Smart has had. But I still am left thinking about a few things. One, I'm looking at Washington State not getting into the top 25 after beating Washington. And they're 3-0. They beat Texas Tech. They beat Washington. They're not one of the best 25 teams in the country. I think they're wrong. I think the voters are wrong. Secondarily, Oregon downgraded, and then plays really well and gets no credit for it. Not in the polls. And so I am left feeling like the West Coast teams, the old Pac-12, so to speak, still kind of getting a raw deal with perception. Are they held to a different standard despite going to new conferences? I'm just asking for friends. Because I kind of felt like Oregon might move up a spot, get a little bit of a benefit of a doubt. I don't know. And then I was left kind of looking at the teams at the bottom, and it's almost like the voters go, well, we're going to give UNLV some cred this week. But, you know, there's still some teams that are out there that I'm going to be surprised if this is what it looks like in the end. Meanwhile, final sequence, Chiefs-Bengals. Great football game.
Three rushing. Here's coming up. Now he's going laterally. He's going to throw it on the run. And it's broken up. And there's no flag. Oh, flag comes in late. A flag comes in late.
Ball.
Yeah, he's there early.
Yep.
Gene Steratore.
That's the second penalty on a huge play by Anthony.
Pass interference. Defense number 33. Ball is placed in the spot of the foul. First down.
Kick for the win. He buries it.
Same old Chiefs winning at the end. Bengals fans going, we've seen this before in the playoffs. Great weekend. We'll talk more about the bias of college football. I want your phone calls, the Civil War and the Apple Cup. What did they tell you about the four Pacific Northwest teams? And now that we've seen three real weeks and we're headed to week four of the college football season, who's your national champion? Has it changed at all? Are you buying Texas? Still in love with Georgia? Is it Ohio State? Is Oregon still on the radar? Is it Miami? We've got a lot to talk about. 503-417-7575.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
The athletic director at Arkansas waving a flag, pleading with the state of Arkansas to give more to their NIL collective.
Everybody loves that Ole Miss is in the top five, right? No, we hate it. We hate it. Ole Miss has about 5,000 members in their football collective. 5,000. We have about 1,000 in our football collective right now. They have 5,000 members. We have 1,000. If we're going to catch up, like I'm going to make it so easy for you. If we could get 10,000 households across the state of Arkansas to give $100 a month, 10,000 households to give $100 a month all year long, we would be in the NIL game from a football perspective. It's that simple. But we can't say the Tysons, the Waltons, the Stevens, the Hunts, hey, they'll take care of it. Because they're not. They're not. They are so incredibly generous, and they have done so much for our program. But if we're really going to get a handle on this NIL and remain competitive, we need to rally people across this state, and we really got to take some pride in the Razorbacks.
Hunter Yurecek, the AD at Arkansas, shaming his fan base and saying, hey, here's the reality. We are operating at a deficit and a disadvantage. Oregon's got it, right? Oregon's got this down. And I'm not in that class of people who want to point a finger at Oregon and look at that and shake my head and go, oh, look, you know, the advantages. Look at what Phil Knight can buy. I saw Phil Knight at the Civil War game. We shook hands as he walked by. He's aging. Everybody knows it. You know, you're looking at him and you're going, okay, like, you know, he has really aged in the last 10 or 12 years, like I think we all have. And it's evident that Oregon's got a limited window here, and it'll be interesting to see if they can get Phil Knight what it is that, you know, he is he's chasing. And what he has invested in, $1 billion, Phil and Penny Knight have invested in the Oregon, you know, enterprise. But I'm not going to begrudge that. I think some people do that. And I look at that and I go, hey, we're in a capitalist society. Good on Oregon for having a donor that can, with one check, change their fate. But a lot of schools like Arkansas, like Oregon State, have got to do it. $50, $500, $100 at a time, whatever they can do. So it's really interesting to me to kind of see what happens next and to see how creative these schools and these conferences get. Now, something came up over the weekend as people started to say the reason Oregon is winning the Civil War game is because they can buy players. Like, that's a bad thing. I got news for you. Everybody's buying players. That's what college football has turned into. You give Oregon State $2 million, they will go out and get 5 or 6 or 7 really good players, and they'll plug them in at quarterback and wide receiver and defensive back and defensive tackle, and they'll be better for it. But I don't think that was the biggest factor in the Civil War outcome being a blowout. I think it was a bigger factor that Jonathan Smith left. I think the NIL stuff matters, and I think over 2 and 3 and 4 years, you lose depth if you don't spend. You don't have as good at players if you don't spend. On the broadcast on Fox, you know, Brock Heward would tell you Oregon's got 5-star this and 5-star that and 5-star this and 5-star that. And Oregon State has a 3-star guy lining up against that player. More often than not, that's going to be an advantage to Oregon, right? Well, how do you change that fate if you're the Pac-12? Is there a creative way for Oregon State, Washington State, and the New World Pac-12 to be able to go toe-to-toe in an NIL world with some of these other conferences? I'm just going to float something out there, and I want you to put it in the back of your mind, and then later, if and when it comes true, you go, oh, that's what he was talking about. As I spoke to some of the incoming school athletic directors about joining the Pac-12, thing kept coming up over and over was Pac-12 Enterprises, the side hustle production company, network, whatever you want to call Pac-12 Enterprises. They're produced football games, whatnot, whatnot, whatnot. Is it possible the Pac-12 Enterprises morphs into an NIL engine for the Pac-12? I don't think it's the wildest theory that I've come up with. But it just was something that in the conversations I said, what was important to you as I was talking to these 80s? What tipped it for you? And it was, well, we want to play against the best schools. Well, we want to be in a conference that every year is going to have access to the playoff. Well, we want a media rights deal that is going to, you know, raise and elevate our school and give us more money than we've ever had before. And oh, by the way, that Pac-12 Enterprises thing is super interesting. And, you know, one AD said we have the ability for all of our athletes to utilize it. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And then it was change of conversation. I just, I, my Spidey senses again are tingling. I told you I thought the Pac-12 would take four Mountain West Conference schools. I thought UNLV would be one of them. I did not have Colorado State in there. I had UNLV. Full disclosure. Or rather, I didn't have Fresno State. I can't remember which. I had three of the four. But again, now I'm thinking about, is Pac-12 Enterprises going to be in the new world of college athletics an engine for NIL? Are the schools going to go, hey, this side hustle thing, what we're going to use it for is we're going to use it to generate NIL money and we will split it equally. I'm just spitballing. Is that possible?
Like when we're talking about the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, like I'm looking at this Oregon State Oregon game, and I know that it was a weird year because Jonathan Smith left and he took all the players with him. And you know, a lot of the players just left to other programs, as you mentioned. You know, some go to Texas, some go other to USC. I feel like this was the first time, and I've been all for playing the Civil War every year, but this was the first time, John. I watched that game on Saturday, and I'm thinking Oregon State does not belong on the field with Oregon. Like, they should not be playing this game because there's going to be, like, how are they going to compete against Oregon, who has all the NIL backing that they can need? They have all the conference backing that they're going to need. Now Oregon State is going to be joining the, you know, making the, remaking the Pac-12 with teams that are from the Mountain West and the AAC. So they're still going to be a tier below the Big Ten. Like, I feel like it's going to be very difficult for a school like Oregon State to ever get back to where they were under the old Pac-12. And that it just seems like now you're talking about, you know, can they get the NIL enterprise going? Yeah, they can to a certain extent, but it's never going to be on the stage of like an Oregon.
I get why you would say that, but I don't think not playing the game is a path to getting closer to Oregon. And frankly, we're just talking about, can you get closer to what the Big Ten has done? And I would offer up Washington State's win over Washington as evidence of the continuity that Washington State had, all the returning players. They had a, you know, that was a fifth-year senior linebacker that tackled Washington State's ball carrier on fourth down. Washington State retained a lot of their talent, most of their talent, despite, you know, the relegation and losing the Pac-12 and being demoted to a two-member conference. Washington State was able to hang in there and play punch for punch with Washington. Look, there's other examples of this. Colorado State is out there. That is a dramatic difference in resources as well. The key for Oregon State is not to dwell too much on one outcome. Oregon State got beat 31-7 last year. There have been other games here. Look, I've covered 22 of these. You know, I seem to remember some other blowouts that have happened. I remember when Oregon put 65 on Oregon State one year in the rivalry game or the Civil War game. But so what Oregon State needs to be thinking about is, look, how much of the outcome on Saturday has to do with NIL? How much of it has to do with conference distributions? The conference distributions haven't really hit yet. Like, you know, so it's not that. That's not what played out on Saturday. And NIL, yes, mattered on Saturday because Dylan Gabriel is lured to Oregon with money and the promise of exposure in the platform. So that matters. And there's Trayshawn Holden and there's, you know, Tez Johnson, and there's a defensive backfield that is elite at Oregon. All of that is NIL driven, of course. But I think the Jonathan Smith defection was the bigger factor in the game being so one-sided. Because I think if he stays at, let's say Jake Dickert gets the job at Washington or Michigan State, and Jonathan Smith says, I'm in this thick or thin, and he's able to retain Aiden Childs, and Damian Martinez says, I'll stay for the $400,000 you're paying me every year because I think we can win this thing. And if Oregon State has that mentality, I'm not saying Oregon State wins the game, but I think it's a much more competitive game. And so what Oregon State has to think about is, how do you close the NIL gap so that it's not a staggering amount of money? Can you increase your CFP access enough to that your normal 3- and 4-star recruits that we're getting under Jonathan Smith go, yeah, I'll go there because I can play on the biggest stage in college football and I can get to the playoff? And can you get your conference distributions more in line with like the Big 12 or the ACC? If you can do that, I think you can stay on the field with Oregon in most years. There's going to be years where, much the same way in which you see rivalry games in other parts of the country, just become blowout games. I think you're going to occasionally see that when Oregon has just got it all lined up and Oregon is going to be a contender for the national championship. They're going to be hard to beat. But as we have seen with a lot of programs, there tends to be a rising up of a couple of years, then a small step back in a rebuild, and then another rising up. Michigan's going through, you know, a little bit of a rebuild now after winning the national title last year. So I don't think it's that dire. I don't think you sit back and go, hey, 128 of these have been played. I just saw the future all in one four-quarter span on Saturday. Let's abandon this rivalry. But I am hearing that from some Oregon State fans who don't want to play this game anymore after getting their pants beat off.
Yeah, it seemed as if there was a real, you know, a real kick in the gut to a lot of Oregon State fans, especially that second half when nothing was going right. They couldn't score anything, couldn't stop anybody. But you mentioned these other schools, like a Colorado playing Colorado State or Washington State. I get that, but you don't see the top-tier programs playing those type of schools. You don't see Ohio State having an in-state rivalry with a lower team like a Toledo. You don't see, it's like a Georgia Tech would be the one that comes to my mind where they play each other, but Georgia dominates that game every single season. We don't see Michigan, play a Western Michigan every year and have it be a competitive game.
You can't aspire to be on Western Michigan's level if you're Oregon State. That's my point. Is like, go, like, look, I gotta look at the Pac-12's internal documents last Wednesday night. They were sort of putting together their news release. I got a peek at kind of some of their talking points, okay? They are aspiring not to be the Big Ten or the SEC. That's too big a leap. Like, that's unreasonable. That is ridiculous. If they said that, you'd laugh at them. But what if they told you, we believe we can build to be comparable with the ACC and the Big 12? Would you buy that?
I can buy that they think that. I don't think that they are, though.
What separates them from those two conferences?
It's just the quality of the schools. Like, they're basically going to be an enhanced Mountain West, which is fine.
Everyone thought Kansas was going to win, you know, be a contender in the Big 12, and UNLV just beat them.
That's true. I don't know. I feel like from top to bottom, these other schools are going to have higher ceilings. Where you look at the ACC, they're going to have a team like Clemson who can battle for a national championship, or Florida State, you know, battle for a national championship, win national championship with Jameis Winston. Like, I just feel like you're looking at the Pac-12. Are they going to have that type of ceiling with any of these teams? Ever. Like, maybe once in a blue moon, I guess you can say maybe compete, but
I think it's really important that in the next 2 to 3 years that the number 5 automatic berth, whoever that conference is this year, maybe it's Boise State out of the Mountain West, or maybe it's, you know, Memphis or somebody, whoever that number 5 is, I like to see that team compete, maybe win their first round playoff game. Or be in the game, not just don't get blown out of the stadium. Because if they do, it can kind of tell you, with some more media dollars and some other backing, NIL and media dollars are basically your big sources of revenue. With those two things in play, it can tell you that they can close the gap a little bit. Now, they're not going to close the gap on the Big Ten and the SEC. But I feel like the Big 12 and the ACC, look at the playoff distributions, $20 million for the Big Ten. $21 million per school to the SEC, $12 million for the Big 12, $13 million for the ACC. What's going to happen over a decade? The Big Ten and the SEC are going to pull away from everybody else. And then it's going to just be like, who's playing at the top of those conferences? And in a given year, can they make the playoff? Can they be close? Can they stay in games? Can we get a Cinderella story like the NCAA tournament? I think those are all going to be conversations that we're having in the coming years. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I just may be prisoner of the moment that it just looked so bad, but this was
it looked horrible.
It was the first time that I felt like, man, these are two completely different teams that don't necessarily need to be playing every year. And I love the Civil War.
It was an affirmation of all the fears of the Oregon State fan that we got left behind. We don't have the money that Oregon has. We don't have the NIL. I could just hear the fans talking that way. Get that out of your head. You're in a rebuild with a new coaching staff. Oregon is competing for a national championship or a Final Four. That's Oregon's goals are different. Oregon State is just trying to get its feet underneath it right now. I think it was a really bad matchup, a really bad timing for Oregon State, bad year to be locked into the Civil War. It looked like all kinds of wrong when you saw those two teams on the field.
Could it be beneficial for Oregon State to not play Oregon for a couple of years before until they get their feet down?
They need that game on the schedule, Steven. They needed the money. Fox paid for that game. That was a financial windfall for them.
But now on the field, they look like they're a inferior product.
They are an inferior product. Now, the job, and they have been inferior in other years. When they got 65 put on them, they were an inferior product then. And what do? Go hire a better head coach. Go, invest more in your football. Scott Barnes came in. One of the first columns I wrote is they're not investing in football. And he, I think he took that personally. He took the cries from his fan base personally. So if you're an Oregon State fan, I'm not, I hate to sound like the Arkansas AD here. Quit your crying. Invest in your NIL. Support your program. And, if the Oregon State has a puncher's chance to close any of that gap, it's coming now. This is the time for Oregon State. And so, yes, they have an opportunity this week against Purdue, a team that just got 66 points on it last week. Go beat that Big Ten team. You're going to Cal later in the year. Go win at Cal. Win those games. Prove that you belong at least in the same conversation as other schools in the Power Four conferences. But, playing Oregon may be your Big Ten champion. It may be your Big Ten runner-up. I wonder at the end of the year how bad that loss really will look if Oregon proves to be everything that we know Oregon can be.
It also, going into the season, we thought this wasn't going to be a game, right? Like, going into the season, we thought Oregon was going to handle Oregon State. It was going to be a 20-plus point victory. And just based off what happened the first 2 weeks, we kind of changed our mind a little bit. So I also think for me, I haven't changed my mind on Oregon State this season. I thought they were going to be a 6-7 win team anyways. I still do. But it was so much worse than I thought it was going to be going into the game just because of the expectations have changed.
Well, look, I would just say this to Oregon State fans. Like, if you looked at any one Civil War football game through a keyhole in a given year, you might be equally discouraged. But I think you have to look at the fact that you lost your head coach. You have to look at the fact that you were in total rebuild. You were fighting and clawing your way back. You have to play the Civil War football game. It may be embarrassing for a year or two or three. Oregon's playing for different stakes. That's the reality. But here's the other thing I would tell Oregon. In the last few weeks, we've wondered about Oregon as well. And I heard a lot of discouraging talk from Oregon fans. I don't know. Maybe it's just the Pacific Northwest. Maybe this is what we do. When, expectations aren't met, people go to a dark, it's dreary, it rains all the time. I feel like there's a lot here to be excited about if you're an Oregon State fan, and there's a lot here to be hopeful about if you're an Oregon fan. Oregon looks good. Oregon looked good last weekend. Oregon State looks like, hey, here's the work that needs to be done. Now get busy doing it.
And you're right with Oregon State. They have a lot of opportunities. You mentioned the schedule. Cal, Washington State, this week against Purdue, Boise State later on. Like, those are some good opportunities to get some big-time wins and kind of, make this loss not feel, not be stinging us so much.
Here's the thing. I started the season by saying, what is the goal for Oregon State? And Oregon State fans called in and said, we want to be bowl eligible. Right. You need to stay relevant. You need to stay visible. You got blown off the field by a team that is a top 10 team in the rankings. Your season's not done, but bowl eligibility is out there for Oregon State. Heck, a 9-win season is out there for Oregon State if it wants to go get it. And it starts this week with Purdue at home, a Big Ten team coming to your stadium.
Got to take care of those home games. That's the big one. Is the crowd going to show up now, or is it too much of a deflating loss to Oregon?
I get it. I get why Oregon State fans, they were hoping for the scene they saw in Seattle, but you have no Jonathan Smith. You had no Aiden Childs. You look at John Mateer. You look at, what Jake Dickert retained from last year. He said it in the post game. These guys stayed for this. The guys at Oregon State didn't stay. The women's basketball team didn't stay. They're starting from a standstill, trying to matter, trying to keep pace. I get it, Beaver fan. Like, I wrote, there was something missing from the Civil War football game. Same colors, same mascots, same teams. Even before kickoff, I was like, there's no stakes here. Nobody's playing for a Rose Bowl. Nobody's playing to get to the playoff. The weather's too nice. It's too warm. The students aren't in school yet. Like, there was just something not right about it. But Oregon State needs to play that football game. It needs the money. It needs the exposure. It needs to get a Big Ten team on its schedule at home. every other year without having to pay for Oregon to come there. It's a home and home. It works. I didn't love where it's being played in week three because it feels like just another game. But it works from a financial standpoint and a scheduling standpoint. It'll work again next year when they have to go to Oregon. And they might lose that game badly too. But if I'm Oregon State, I continue to play this game. And I continue to strive to close the gap. And I think fashioning yourself as a wannabe Big 12 ACC team is a smarter play than going, you know, hey, we want to be national champion. It's just unrealistic. We want to be in the Big 10 or SEC. It's unrealistic. Just so I think, you know, this move towards realignment is smart. But I also think, like, you know, you have to take these shrewd, smart, incremental steps. You got to build your NIL collective. You have to get your best media deal. You have to put together the best conference you can and try to form a path to the playoff in most years for your conference champion or every year. But beyond that, you know, sitting around belly aching about a loss is not going to solve anything. Leave it here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Coming up, Anna's going to give us the 5 at 5. It will be riveting. Plus, I had a dream last night. You ever wake up, you've had a dream, and it's so real, you think it's actually happening. I had a dream last night. It involves sports, and it involves the old TV show Unsolved Mysteries, who, you know, was presented by, I can't remember the dude's name, who was the voice of Unsolved Mysteries, Cold Cases. Unsolved Mysteries, that was a big show that was on TV when I was a kid. So I had an Unsolved Mysteries dream involving sports. Anna's going to try to decipher that coming up, plus the 5 at 5 and a whole bunch of that more talk about what's going on with NFL and college football and more. Leave it here. Hour 3 ahead.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
So last night I'm dreaming. I'm asleep, but I'm dreaming, and I'm having this dream that Unsolved Mysteries has hired me to help them introduce a sports story. This is riveting stuff. Like, I thought it was a pretty cool dream. I later told Anna about it, and she kind of waved it off. You know, and I regretted kind of telling her about it, but Robert Stack. Thank you to intern Corey for pointing out Robert Stack was the host of Unsolved Mysteries. And you might remember he had this kind of ominous delivery. And we were shooting the intro to this show like in Portland downtown near the waterfront. It was early morning, kind of dark. There was like a fog coming off of the river. And it was, you know, it was the same kind of the feel at the beginning of Unsolved Mysteries. It's unmistakable. You know what I'm talking about. Come on. Well, here was the story. I'm almost embarrassed to share this because Anna shot it down so effectively. Why did you shoot it down? So,
oh, like, no. Just please share it because I need other people to weigh in on whether I had the right take.
It's a dream. I can't help but the intersection of unsolved mysteries and my dream and sports went together. And Robert Stack was there in the dream.
Oh, well, why did they need you if he was there as the host?
They just needed me because they were like, A, there's kind of a sports twist. We don't understand if Mr. Stack knows what he's talking about on this stuff. Let's get you involved in this. And this was probably brought on because last night I did text with a friend who's a sports memorabilia collector.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay. So it was planted in my head and I happen to be watching some Sopranos. Okay. Maybe it was like the combination of Tony Soprano and the mob and this sports collector thing that got into my head. And all of a sudden here's Robert Stack in an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. But essentially, I feel like I should be playing the theme in the back when I do this.
You should.
Essentially, what was going on was it was an episode about sports memorabilia collecting. Millions of dollars of fake sports memorabilia was out on the market, and they were trying to find the bad guy who was responsible for selling all this fake sports memorabilia to the public. Have you seen Eduardo, whatever his name was? And if you have, call this phone number. And Robert Stack seemed very interested in catching this guy. It was not a life or death situation. But I really regretted sharing it with you. Because, you know, in my mind, it was like this. In your mind, it was that. You know? It was just, you know, you were like, that is the most boring Unsolved Mysteries story ever. Worst episode of Unsolved Mysteries ever would be the episode where they go after the memorabilia guy who jilted Steven out of a autographed Anthony Simons jersey.
What I specifically said was, well, there is an audience out there for that somewhere. But granted, this was like 5:30 in the morning,
right?
Where you're having that like groggy morning conversation. How'd you sleep? Did you have a dream? This is what you're laying on me at like 5:30 in the morning.
It's very important.
Maybe my judgment was off. Maybe that would be like the best episode they'd ever had. Next episode would be what happened to like the underwater basket weaver.
All right. That's a little much. I thought it was a pretty good episode. Robert Stack seemed pleased with
my, yeah.
The other thing that I remember is he was really proud of me for getting it right on the first take.
Oh, for one take wonder.
One take guy.
One take wonder.
I needed no, like, yeah, let's try that again.
Yeah.
No, hey, go slower. No, I just nailed it, you know?
So, and you jogged my memory, though. Like, who, first of all, who didn't love that show? The ratings for that show had to have been through the roof. And then what's curious about it is, like, it was the precursor to a lot of these true crime shows that are so popular now, and I would even say the podcast, but it literally was Unsolved Mysteries, where it's like, now if you watch a Dateline, they wrap it up in an hour.
Yeah.
You know?
And you can always tell in Dateline.
Yeah.
Because the one guy will be, they don't want to show you that he's in prison interviewing the guy
right,
who is accused of murder.
Right, right.
But you can kind of tell that he's not in like a polo shirt or a nice dress shirt. And you're like, oh, that guy's in prison. Yeah. By the end of the show, that guy's going to be in prison. He doesn't look well.
It's like a reveal, but not really a reveal.
That guy doesn't look like he's doing too well.
But it's remarkable to me that like we all loved watching this show that didn't have a resolution. Like the end of it was, if you know something about this crime, here's the tip line, right? To call in and help solve it?
Well, the key to every hysterical news story that has ever been done on television or in print is it could happen here.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
What do we do there's an earthquake in, you know, in China?
Yeah.
Oh, could it happen here?
Right.
There's a tidal wave, because tsunami. Mm-hmm. Could it happen here?
Right.
Why? Because it makes it real for people who are watching and reading.
Yeah.
Like it could happen to me? Like what if the ocean rose on the West Coast? Like, could it happen here is always the thing. And so that's why Keith Morrison on Dateline is so good, because what does he do at the beginning of the episode?
Every episode. It's like the town is, you know, middle America.
Oh. Yeah. We're going to run out of real estate here on the 5 at 5, you realize.
Oh, yeah.
We have a short show today.
You're just going to scrap it?
Let's just do this first, okay?
Yeah.
So Keith Morrison will go, like, it was a quiet neighborhood, just like the one you live in. Like, he just kind of does that to you.
Yeah.
You know, just regular.
And it
people.
Was always like, it was, you know, it was the guy next door. It was the guy next door.
So it makes you, it just scares the bejesus
out
of you.
He was nobody and everybody.
So that's what this Robert Stack guy was doing on Unsolved Mysteries, it scared the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. I watched it and I was like, those people could be anywhere. They could be outside my window right now. That guy that he's talking about. So.
Yeah, it could be a massive crime of fake memorabilia out there.
So without getting into the 5 at 5, rip through like what, you know, your top couple stories are. Because we only have 3 minutes.
This is condensed.
We're going into Monday Night Football. No benchmark.
Yeah.
Just kind of go through what your stories would be. All
right. They were going to be C.J. Stroud giving Caleb Williams some wisdom after the game.
I'm not sure I need that.
Okay.
No, I'm not sure that if I'm Caleb Williams, I need C.J. Stroud's wisdom.
Okay.
Like, that's not like Tom Brady whispering in your ear.
I thought you were questioning my news game.
Yeah, moving on, Anna.
Okay, move on. He said, just keep going. It's not going to be easy. You got picked at one and for a reason.
Just keep going is his great wisdom? As opposed to what, C.J.? Nah,
this was not worthy.
C.J.'s other line was quit. you've had enough.
I kind of like this version of the 5 at 5. The Green Bay Packers center actually threw up on the football before the snap to Malik Willis.
Yeah.
Which is why Malik Willis didn't throw the ball. He just kind of tucked it under and ran because he didn't want to throw a football that had puke on it.
He's very polite.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got?
Nice decision there. Olympian Jordan Chiles is filing her appeal to get the bronze medal back that they took back.
Yeah. They should have just gave all of those gymnasts bronze medals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Participation, that one.
Okay. Trevor Lawrence is struggling. He says he needs to do better. Broncos, Bo Nix, offering a blunt explanation.
Oh, can I play that one?
For what happened at the end of his Broncos game.
Bo, can you take us through the interception in the end zone?
Chop back, do it to the other team.
There he is, literally. That was literal.
It was literal.
He didn't look... It's not the Bo Nix I saw after Oregon games. You know, I feel bad for him, and you know, it happens to rookies. But I think he's gonna have a good season. I think he'll salvage it. He's not on a great team though.
Yeah, I don't know. Caitlin Clark's teammates helped her avoid getting another technical, and I thought this was funny. The visiting Saints fans had a parade, which is known in New Orleans as the Second Line, outside of Dallas Cowboys Stadium after beating Dallas.
I need to see like video of that.
It was like trombones and trumpets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that impromptu parade.
When you travel around the country nowadays, it used to be you could go to a city, and I know this because, you know, I work a job that travels. You could go to a city and you could, like, when you're leaving the airport, you find something that's unique to that city.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cities that are just doing the same stuff. Everybody's doing the same stuff in the airport. Everybody's doing the same stuff in their downtown. New Orleans has an identity.
Mm-hmm.
It has a distinct identity, and I love that about that city. We should all strive to have an identity. All right, I wish you happy dreams tonight. Hope Robert Stack doesn't show up in your dreams. We have Monday Night Football coming up. I still think that's a great episode, that sports memorabilia episode. No? We'll see. The bald-faced truth not here for a long time, just a good time. Have a good evening.